Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit newyorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
This is The Writer's Voice, new fiction from The New Yorker. I'm Deborah Treisman, fiction editor at The New Yorker. On this episode of The Writer's Voice, we'll hear Yiyun Lee read her story, When We Were Happy, We Had Other Names, from the October 1st, 2018 issue of the magazine. Lee is the author of two story collections and two novels, The Vagrants and Kinder Than Solitude. She's been publishing fiction and nonfiction in The New Yorker since 2003. Now here's Yiyun Lee.
When we were happy, we had other names. The funeral director would be right with them, a woman's voice said through the intercom when they rang the bell. After standing on the porch for a minute and then another minute, Jia Yu and Chris sat down on two wicker chairs, a small round table with a potted yellow chrysanthemum between them. It was a cloudless day, the sky intensely blue. A pair of squirrels were chasing each other on the lawn, and some unseen birds in the trees, which had yet to change colors, made loud noises, a game of hue and cry in a quiet neighborhood. Perhaps the real setting of every Shakespeare play, Jia Yu thought, is a wallless waiting room like this, life as an antechamber to death. That thought, 4 months later, struck Jia Yu as unnecessarily theatrical. Who was she to talk about Shakespeare when the last time she had read him was in college, in Beijing, for an English degree she had made little use of? Now, when Jia Yu thought about the sun-soaked days immediately after Evan's death, she realized that the woman whose voice she and Chris had heard through the intercom on that first and subsequent visit had never appeared in person. There was no front desk at the funeral home. Every time the door had opened, it was the funeral director's handshake they encountered. The first time Jia Yu had called, the soft-spoken man had said, "Oh God," after he had asked for Evan's date of birth and received the answer. But the voice on the intercom belonged to someone, a receptionist who did not need a name tag, and she would be spared meeting with all those clients day in and day out who never would have set foot in the house were it not for death's mandate. Jia Yu had never previously given a moment of thought to the receptionist in any other office. Yet this unmet woman, having remained faceless, refused to be reduced to a generic receptionist. The dead, too, should never become generally and generically dead. But that, Jia Yu had realized as she read a recent article on the alarming statistics of teenage suicides, was a futile protest. Death brought a new routine. There were grief support groups to join, letters from relatives and friends to attend to, pleading phone calls to make to Naomi, who was a college sophomore in Wisconsin, and who, after the funeral, had begun to limit her parents' access to her life. This new flimsy routine reminded Jia Yu of her first transistor radio, a birthday present from her grandfather when she turned 5. It was a luxury for 5-year-old, frustrating too, since it was not easy for her fingers to maneuver the dial to find the one station with a half-hour afternoon preschool program. And when she did succeed, the dial stayed at the right frequency for no more than a few minutes before it began to shift, and the songs about the thieving foxes and partying bears would drift into static. How did that girl with the radio in her lap become this woman, in the middle of her life, with so many dials failing? Sometimes Jia Yu parked her car in front of the garage door, unable to push the button to open it. Other times, she cleaned the house tirelessly, or chopped onions until they became a translucent puddle of tears on the cutting board. Why she balked at the garage door or ill-used the onions, she did not ask, because the answer was a given. Any action, any feeling, erratic or not, fell under the all-encompassing umbrella called grief. Grief? What is grief? One morning when Jia Yu opened her eyes, she said to the ceiling, "Grief, I don't know who you are, so don't pretend you know who I am." She and Chris went back to work right after the funeral. Jia Yu administered cultural exchange projects at the public university in a neighboring town. Chris managed the medical engineering department at a local hospital. Both had struggled at first, Chris leaving work a few times, Jia Yu hiding in the ladies' room and weeping for 2 days in a row. But they carried on with a steadiness that appeared stoic to the world. Jia Yu tidied up their garden and planted the autumn bulbs before the first frost. Chris winterized the irrigation system. Together, they bought pumpkins from a roadside stand for as usual. Both texted Naomi daily, knowing that behind the cold mask, there was a heart as damaged as theirs. After some time, Naomi softened and agreed to come home for Thanksgiving. In their own minds, it was not the stoicism that sustained them, but defeatism. At the end of the workday, when one of them felt paralyzed, they fell into that state by turns. The other would insist that they drive to a park in a nearby town. There, they were just a middle-aged couple taking a walk in the dusk. Dusk fell earlier day by day, and then took a leap into darkness in early November. "But why?" one of them would say, breaking the silence on their walk. "And why him?" "I didn't see it coming, did you?" "No, I thought it was adolescence." "I thought so too. I imagined adolescence as a difficult exam everyone has to take." "Not everyone passes. It's so hard to be a young person these days." "Harder than it was for us, isn't it?" "A lot of researchers think so. I read about it in newspapers." "But I don't understand. He talked about his swimming meet that morning. I thought he looked excited." "And the way he talked about his driver's license, I was going to take him to the DMV first thing on his birthday. I was going to call the school and say he had a doctor's appointment." "Do you think something happened at school?" "If none of his friends knew, you would think with so many friends and a happy childhood." "We did give him a happy childhood, didn't we?" "He said so himself." "Naomi says so too." "What went wrong then?" "We'll never know." "Not knowing is hard. It's so hard. The hardest, isn't it?" 50 years ago, Jia Yu and Chris might have caught slight glances in their Midwestern town. But now it was not a big deal for a man who had grown up on a corn farm and a woman who had grown up in a Beijing alleyway to marry and lead a family life not much different from their neighbors. Even though Chris's mother had said several times at the wedding that to her it was a mind-boggling miracle. Their marriage, 19 years this past summer, had had its share of stumbles, the kind that occurred in any marriage. Together, Jia Yu and Chris had striven to make a solid life, parenting Naomi and Evan with common sense and love. How had something this colossal found and trapped them, Jia Yu thought, when they were so ordinary, so unambitious, so inconspicuous? The death of a child belonged to a different realm, that of a Greek tragedy or a mawkish movie. What was the probability of an ant being struck by lightning and for the ant to survive and toy on? With what wounds? Jia Yu started a spreadsheet on her computer. Family members, relatives, neighbors, acquaintances. She tried to list all those she had met who had died. She put in what she could remember, the birth and death year for each person, and the cause of death, leaving question marks here and there. Though she could have looked up an obituary to find the missing information. What she wanted was to test her own memory. If she could remember a story or two about each of the dead, they would not be reduced to the generally and generically dead. Take, for instance, Mrs. Eileen Wilson, one of the oldest guests at Jia Yu's wedding. "A cousin of mine," Mrs. Wilson had told Jia Yu at the reception, "was a missionary in China." "When was that?" Jia Yu asked. 1891, Mrs. Wilson said. "My grandfather was born that year," Jia Yu said. "What a coincidence. My cousin died that year. He was in Shandong province for 2 months and got his head chopped off," Mrs. Wilson said, placing a hand on her own neck. "Oh, my goodness," Jia Yu said. "I'm so sorry." The old woman laughed. "Pah, you don't have to apologize. I never met him. I'll tell you who I would love to have met. My great aunt Sally. She stole 5 sheep from her neighbor. Back then, you'd get hanged for that crime. But she was pardoned on account of being a woman." Thinking about the deceased was nothing like traveling down memory lane. "Memory lane," Jia Yu said to herself. "What an odd phrase. Only an organized mind could have come up with it." Remembering was not like walking along a tree-lined path with wooden posts marking the years. Memory was a haystack. Search for any one story, and you get 100 stories. None of them complete. And the stories kept coming. They were distractions from thinking about Evan, even though distraction was unattainable, and thinking about Evan was the wrong way to put it. Thinking, like remembering, was an action of retrospect. Evan was here all the time, in the new elaborate recipes she tried on weekends, in the vases of flowers she placed around the house to combat bleakness, in the hollow voice of the guided meditation app that brought her little reprieve from heartache. She left the spreadsheet open on her computer. Each name was more than just a story of a death. Take Sister Wen's husband, for instance. Sister Wen, the youngest daughter of the family who lived next to Jia Yu's in Beijing, was 14 years older than Jia Yu. When Sister Wen started dating a police officer, every Sunday morning, Jia Yu would wait for him at the entrance of the alley. The moment he arrived on his motorcycle, she would run back. It didn't matter that Sister Wen was already standing in the yard, listening for the engine. Jia Yu wanted to be the one to shout, "He's here! He's here! He's here!" as though she were a magpie, bringing the early good tidings of the marriage. 50. Liver cancer. When Jia Yu typed this next to the man's name, she could not see him as an older man. Once, he and Sister Wen had taken Jia Yu for a ride. Jia Yu had climbed into the sidecar, clutching the metal bar in front of her and looking up at Sister Wen and her boyfriend. She in an apricot-colored dress, he in a white uniform. "When we were happy, we had other names." Jia Yu remembered reading the line as a student, though she could not recall the context now. A young couple in love, and a child wanting nothing more than to witness that love story. What were they all now? A dead man, a widow, and a mother who had lost a child. But Jia Yu was not the first parent to lose a child. Of this, she constantly reminded herself. There was her cousin Min, whose baby had died of leukemia before she turned 2. The baby had faded from Jia Yu's memory, though she knew that if she opened an old album, she would find a picture of her. After she died, many relatives had shed tears, but how many of them could tell a story about that little girl now? Min had another child later, a healthy boy. An aunt who treasured sons more than daughters had said to Jia Yu's mother once that the whole thing could be seen in a positive light, since the baby's death had made room for the little brother. "Sometimes a daughter is just bad news," the aunt had said, "and the one-child policy certainly doesn't help." And there was Ying, Jia Yu's playmate, before the pair had moved to different elementary schools. Their mother taught together at the Beijing No. 2 school for the deaf and the mute, and the girls would play together in the schoolyard in the afternoon as they waited for their mothers to get off from work. A year younger than Jia Yu, Ying was a timid girl, and Jia Yu liked to tease her with a caterpillar hidden in a matchbox or a beetle let loose on the back of her hand. Ying would cry, and Jia Yu would comfort her, and then they would reconcile, all the while pretending that they did not notice the students around them, most of whom were boarders supported by the government. They were much older, some in their late teens, ready to leave school after an apprenticeship. Jia Yu wondered now if they had both been performing a little. She is seeking any excuse to make Ying cry, and Ying welcoming every opportunity to make loud noises that would differentiate the two of them from the students. Some of them stood in a half circle around Jia Yu and Ying, staring unsmilingly at the two girls and then gesturing among themselves. It thrilled Jia Yu to know that they were talking about her and her friend. There was no other way for her and Ying to enter that silent world than by being at the center of the half circle, speaking to each other without having to move a finger. A year ago, Jia Yu's mother had called to report the death of Ying, ovarian cancer, 43, her daughter just starting middle school. Jia Yu could not see her childhood playmate as a woman in a coffin, a mother's lost child, a child's lost mother. But what difference did seeing make? Perhaps grief was nothing but disbelief. The first snow fell and melted, and the second snow. After that, there was no reason to keep counting. The neighbors put up Christmas lights, blue and white icicles under the eaves, orange and red bulbs outlining the evergreens, a deer pulling a sleigh in one front yard, white-winged angels trumpeting in another. The world was not new, and offered little evidence that it would ever be new again. Perhaps grief was the recognition of having run out of illusions. Would decorating the house make us too sad? Jia Yu asked one evening as they parked in front of their unlit house. Would we be sadder if we didn't? What do you think Evan would have wanted us to do? I don't know. I can talk myself into either option. Same here. What about the Christmas tree? What about the four stockings Jia Yu had embroidered with their names? What about going to Mrs. Erickson's house on Christmas Eve? Mrs. Erickson's granddaughter and Evan had been born a day apart and had, for different reasons, stayed in the NICU in adjacent rooms. After that, Mrs. Erickson had turned Evan into another grandchild of hers, and for 15 Christmases, they had joined Mrs. Erickson and her extended family, feasting on baked ham, scalloped potatoes, and crumb cake. Afterward, they sang Christmas carols, accompanied by Mrs. Erickson on an old upright piano, which was tuned once a year for the occasion. Every question asked led to a dead end. Jia Yu figured that one of these days, she and Chris would look at each other and, without hesitation, drive to the lot to pick out a tree. Chris would put up the lights, and Jia Yu would arrange the stockings, including Evan's, on the mantel. When the invitation came from Mrs. Erickson, they would ask if they could bring pot stickers, their usual contribution. They would do everything as they had always done it. Always was an untrustworthy word. Still, what could one do but abide by the rule of always? In a fallible life, it was a path no better or worse than any other. The spreadsheet stopped growing. The ache remained unmitigated. A person's knowledge of death could be exhaustible, yet it did nothing to exhaust the pain of losing a child. If Jia Yi was to start a spreadsheet of people who were alive and healthy and happy, perhaps she would end up with a much longer list. But if many deaths could not produce an effective antidote to one death, what difference would many lives make? It occurred to Jia Yu that someday Evan might appear on another person's list. The thought neither consoled nor disturbed her. On the spreadsheet, there was Hua, a high school classmate who had committed suicide the year before they graduated. There was the father of Jia Yu's preschool friend, who had killed himself 2 years ago, one evening after he finished rehearsing with the retirees' choir. Jia Yu had never once spoken to Hua in high school. Her friend's father wore duck-framed glasses, but that was all she could remember. Still, she returned to the spreadsheet often, trying to recall one more moment, one more detail. Sometimes a new name occurred to Jia Yu, amazing her, as though the dead were patiently waiting for her to recover them. An old woman known as Granny Brave, who had lived alone in the next alleyway, was said to have been a peasant partisan during the Second World War. After her death, this was confirmed by the newspapers, which also printed a picture of the Brave Girl, her nickname during the war, when she was a teenager, her hair chopped short, a carbine on her shoulder, and two unsheathed daggers haphazardly tucked into her belt. In third grade, Jia Yu and her best friend had schemed to win a year-long contest that consisted of doing good deeds. And they decided that they would visit Granny Brave every day, cleaning her house, running errands for her, preparing simple meals, and listening to her reminisce about her legendary war years. She waved them away the first two times they came, and when they persevered, she chased them out with a broom. If they dared to show up again, she admonished, she would report them to the school as the harassers of a veteran revolutionary. Oh, such humiliation, such injustice, Jia Yu thought now, feeling for the first time in a long while the urge to laugh. She remembered that, the day after Granny Brave's threat, she and her friend had dug up 10 earthworms and hurled them into the old woman's yard. Oh, what fun to relive the years of the young and the undefeated, or to retrace the lives of the old and the accomplished. Of all the people on her list, Jia Yu was most often drawn back to her grandfather. He had lived a long and happy life, and had died at the age of 101. He had been a good husband to his wife, a loving father to his 8 children, affectionate and fair to all his grandchildren. He had not cried when Ming's little girl died, but had given each of his great-grandchildren born after that a silver longevity lock, a pendant with 100 years of long life engraved on one side, and wealthy, lucky, safe, and peaceful on the other, to secure their fragile existence. In his old age, after the death of his wife, he had spent part of his time living with each of his children, and part traveling alone, sometimes stopping by the homes of those grandchildren who had established families of their own. Because Jia Yu's mother was the youngest of the siblings, her family often received her grandfather in August. Never did the visit extend beyond a few weeks. He did not allow himself to become a nuisance to anyone. Her grandfather's life alone would make a good memory lane, Jia Yu thought. His stay had usually overlapped with her summer holiday, and she had been his companion on his morning jogs, evening strolls, and many outings to the palaces and the parks of Beijing. She could, while sitting in front of the computer, walk down memory lane in the summer palace or the Forbidden City, as long as she followed the never-changing routes, from a round pavilion to an octagonal pavilion, from an arched stone bridge to an arched wooden bridge, from a koi pond with lily pads to a koi pond without lily pads. On the hottest days, they had remained at home, sitting in the shade of the scholar tree in the yard, her grandfather pouring tea for himself from a tin pot kept cool in the basin of water, Jia Yu hunting for inchworms among the low-hanging branches. The transistor radio he had given her they kept at low volume, but when they tired of readjusting the dial, they left it to broadcast static. Sometimes her grandfather dozed off. Only then would Jia Yu pick out one of the coins he had given her and go buy an ice pop. Every summer before her grandfather's arrival, her mother would talk to herself as she readied his room. "Each visit is one visit fewer in this life," she said. "At his age, you never know if there will be a next time." After years of teaching at the school for the deaf and the mute, she had developed a habit of speaking her thoughts aloud, forgetting that the world could hear what she said. Jia Yu heard everything. A more sensitive child might have worried herself sleepless or watched her grandfather's every movement with anxiety. But nothing about him had indicated ill health. After a day or two, it was hard not to believe that he was going to live forever. All things had seemed in order under that scholar tree. Jia Yu was an ordinary child, easily contented. Her grandfather, a man with a well-lived life. Life was supposed to be like that, each generation reaching a gracious end when it was their turn. Yet this order, disturbed by Evan's death, made Jia Yu uneasy. If she had taken it for granted that Evan would lead a long and happy life like her grandfather, could she not have made similar mistakes in blindly taking everything for granted? Then two more deaths showed up for her list one day, a mother and a daughter, neither name known to her. This so startled Jia Yu that she thought her heart, already brittle, could no longer remain a steady organ inside her. For days afterward, she lived in a trance, fearing the inaccuracies of memory, excavating the archaeology of her childhood, the fragments like small pieces of bone, delicate and dusty. It was on one of their evening walks that Jia Yu and her grandfather had met a woman and her two daughters, the older one Jia Yu's age, the younger one still in a bamboo stroller. That there had been two girls, Jia Yu was certain, and that there had been a bamboo stroller. She and the other girl took turns pushing it around while Jia Yu's grandfather and the girl's mother sat on a bench nearby. Jia Yu had turned 5 earlier that spring, and she carried a transistor radio with her everywhere. The girl who was to be her playmate for a few weeks asked to see the radio, and Jia Yu showed her the on and off switch, the dials for changing the frequency and the volume, and the collapsible antenna, which they put out and pretended was a fishing pole. The girl in the stroller, who in their play was the fish to be caught, held her hands up and cried, but they kept the end of the antenna just out of her reach. All these things Jia Yu remembered now, the pot-lit haircuts of both sisters she could see, and her own favorite dress, a yellow sleeveless smock with sunflowers embroidered around the hem. Then the younger girl disappeared, along with the stroller. It happened that same summer, but Jia Yu could not remember exactly when. One day, she and the older sister climbed up onto a rock next to a man-made lake, where the girl said that her sister had died but didn't say how. Without the little sister to be the fish, Jia Yu and the girl did not have a game to play that day. They stayed on the rock, listening to the radio, Jia Yu remembered, taking care not to drop the radio from that height, and watching the girl's mother and Jia Yu's grandfather on the bench. Was the woman telling him the news with tears or with dry eyes? Was he, despite maintaining the proper distance between an older man and a young mother, imagining her hand in his? And soon came the storm in the house. It was the only time Jia Yu had seen her mother lose her temper with her grandfather. Impossible, she had called him. Crazy, she had called the woman. What would people think, she had yelled. A man of his age, and a woman young enough to be his granddaughter. It could not have been only financial support that he had wanted to give the woman, Jia Yu thought now, as he could have given her money without letting anyone know. Was it a marriage, or a less conventional arrangement, he was proposing? Had he envisioned altering his widower's life out of pity for a widowed mother who had lost too much? Or out of affection for a woman who had brightened the summer as his life approached its curtain call? Or perhaps out of a loneliness that his many children and grandchildren could not entirely alleviate? Jia Yu did not dare to answer any of these questions. An answer was unnecessary. When a question asked was enough to give the past another name. The summer after that had been eventless, as were those that followed. As always, Jia Yu and her grandfather walked the city, but they did not run into the woman and her remaining daughter again. A few years later, the girl transferred to Jia Yu's school. Jia Yu recognized her right away, but the girl did not seem to remember Jia Yu. The story was that the girl's mother had died, and the girl now lived with an uncle and an aunt, the latter a distant cousin of her mother's. The couple had given her a new name, which Jia Yu now remembered. Memory could be tight-fisted with the past, and then, without warning, open a floodgate. Xu Chang, the girl was called, a name with two characters, meaning happy and carefree. The couple who had adopted the girl must have had some hope for her. Jia Yu realized that she had not known and would never know the girl's old name when she had been her mother's daughter. Jia Yu's grandfather had died when she was in college. Only then did she learn that he had had a wife before her grandmother. That wife had killed herself when their only son died, as an infant, of diphtheria. This knowledge, learned too late, had been boxed up by Jia Yu as distant, ancient history, and she had not imagined that family of three until now. If life was an antechamber to death, death was an antechamber too, to other lives. She thought about the rock by the man-made lake, from which she and the girl had watched the man and the woman on the bench. It had taken her child's death for Jia Yu to mourn her grandfather again, this time as the young man who had buried his wife and child. She would not say it was late, though. True grief, beginning with disbelief and often ending elsewhere, was never too late.
That was Yiyun Li reading her story, When We Were Happy We Had Other Names. Li's book of memoir and essays, Dear Friend, From My Life I Write to You in Your Life, was published last year. You can hear more New Yorker fiction read by the authors on NewYorker.com and on the New Yorker apps, available from the App Store or from Google Play. On the New Yorker Fiction Podcast, we invite writers to choose stories from the magazine's archives to read and discuss. This month, Tessa Hadley reads New York Girl by John Updike. You can subscribe to that and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app. Tell us what you thought of this podcast by rating and reviewing The Writer's Voice in Apple Podcasts on iTunes. Our theme music is by Jordan Batiste and Ross Michaels of North American Plastics. The Writer's Voice is produced by Jill Duboff of NewYorker.com. I'm Deborah Treisman. Thanks for listening.
The New Yorker Festival is one for the books. Get tickets to hear your favorite novelists, writers, and essayists in conversation with New Yorker editors on October 5th through 7th. Award-winning Japanese author Haruki Murakami talks with Deborah Treisman. I'll be in conversation with Zadie Smith. Gary Steingart talks with Sheila Kolhatkar. And Cressida Lajshan leads a discussion with Lauren Groff, Rachel Kushner, and Tommy Orange, all about writing fiction in the worst of times. It's all part of this year's New Yorker Festival. Explore the full festival lineup and buy tickets now at NewYorker.com/festival. That's NewYorker.com/festival.